Good morning. You're watching Deep Program with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou. It's Tuesday, December 9th, 2025. Thanks for joining us. Please like, follow, and share the show. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ted. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So, lots to talk about. Japan and China, always regional rivals, historically, are at each other's throats a little bit. That should scare anyone who knows anything about history.
Like you said in the thumbnail, what could go wrong?
Japanese militarism. When has that ever been a problem?
I thought the Japanese weren't supposed to have a military, right? Wasn't that the thing all through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, that the Japanese didn't have a military because they went so apeshit crazy during World War II that they were just going to go without a military lest they invade somebody else?
Yeah, well, I mean, just because they had designs on the entire Pacific Ocean doesn't mean that they were greedy. So maybe we'll see a greater East Asia co-prosperity sphere again. But yeah, no, it's terrifying. And Cambodia and Thailand, that skirmish is heating up. We have nearly 100 people dead, tens of thousands, by some reports, hundreds of thousands of refugees already on the move. Meanwhile, similarly, another conflict that Trump weighed in on between Congo and Rwanda, that's heating up too. We have 200,000 refugees, also scores have been killed there. That seems, I'm worried about a replay of the Rwandan genocide of the 90s. And then I really am dying to hear, and I'm saving this for later, your thoughts about the sort of hidden role of the Qataris and the Saudis and other Middle Eastern players in Hollywood, and how they're backing up Paramount's bid for Warner Brothers. So super interesting stuff. And of course, obviously, please go ahead if you're watching live on Rumble or YouTube, please go ahead and chime in and ask us your questions and comments. And as always, we will get to as many as we possibly can. By the way, just to something that we're doing that's new, we wanted to announce, and we're going to bring in producer Robbie West to talk about it in just a few minutes when there's more people have a chance to trickle into the show. But basically, we're going to have a live show. We're going to be taking calls, like audio calls,
actual calls.
You'll be able to call up and talk to us. That's going to be Friday, so please be watching, and Robbie will fill us in on exactly how you get to do that. All right. What should we talk about first, John?
You know, I'm kind of perplexed by this whole Cambodia, Thailand thing. They've long had difficult relations. Even during the Vietnam War, as the U.S. was secretly bombing and waging war against Cambodia, they were doing it from Thailand for the most part. We had thousands, tens of thousands of troops that were based in Thailand. We still have those bases in Thailand. And Cambodia has never recovered, really, from the devastation of the war. They went through the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot and more mainline communist dictatorships. And
Vietnamese invasion.
The Vietnamese invasion, that's right.
Although that liberated them from the Khmer Rouge.
From the Khmer Rouge, which they desperately needed to be liberated. So I'm just not getting what the problem is. Is it really just this stupid island and this ruined temple on the island in the middle of the river that separates the two countries? I can't imagine that that's what it is. It's got to be something deeper. When we've spoken in the past about the EMEA crisis between Greece and Turkey, where Bill Clinton had to literally get on a conference call with the prime minister of Greece and the president of Turkey and tell them to back off because they were going to go to war over this little island that had nothing but a herd of goats on it. Is it the same kind of thing where it really is the island, or is it deeper than that? I'm just not understanding.
I think it's about Thai versus Cambodian nationalism. And two countries, like you said, that have always had piss poor relations.
Terrible relations.
And the U.S. has definitely, helped you know, fuel that by playing them off against each other. Cambodia has a desperate inferiority complex due to not just the genocide, but the effect of it. And it's so desperately poor.
Yeah.
Thais have a lot of national pride. They feel like they're in an up and coming country, but Cambodia is, you know, it's disrespected in the region. But I think, you know, my take on this, John, is that it's one of those things where it's about the, you know, it's about the stupid ruined monastery.
Yeah.
But it's,
but not really.
But it becomes, you know, but after a while, it's also tit for tat, right? Like, you guys killed some of our border guards. We can't let that pass. And then nobody remembers where it started. And you only think about what the other guy did. And then you're just, I mean, I think that's where we're at.
Ted, you and I once talked about the border between Pakistan and India and going to see sort of the changing of the guard. There's a ceremonial border crossing just east of Lahore. And I went with a group of ISI officers when I was stationed there. We had just caught Abu Zubaydah. They wanted to celebrate. So we go to this border crossing. They have bleachers set up on the border crossing. And they're wearing these, you know, big hats with big feathers in them and red coats.
It looks like the Raj.
It looks like very much like the Raj. And the ISI Colonel Muhammad that I was with, gleefully, like a kid, said to me, we are so proud of the depth of our hatred of one another that we want to put it on display. And he said it completely seriously. And I've been thinking about the last couple of days that might be what we're looking at here. The depth of their hatred for one another goes so far that they just can't help themselves. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, the papers. It's like Chris Hedges, right, wrote a book called War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. It's hatred is a force that gives us meaning. I mean, look at domestically, the Democrats and the Republicans. This morning, there was where's he from? That senator from Maryland, Democrat. He was on NPR this morning. You probably heard him. And he was talking about, like, the problems with the Democratic Party and, like, we have to be, against, you know, for something, not just against Trump.
Yeah.
But he was illustrating the problem himself just by, like, just talking about how bad and lawless Trump was. And, like, you know, it's kind of like, but he didn't, you know, put anything forward. But it was like, basically, we're defined by our hatred in a highly polarized thing. That becomes its own reward after a while. And it does make you feel powerful. I mean, when I semi-jokingly talk about the former publisher of the LA Times, Austin Buettner, and how much I hate him, it's kind of fun to hate him. Some part of me enjoys that, like, my hatred for him.
That's how I feel about John Brennan.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly how I feel.
It's like a sport, right?
Yeah, like a sport. Yeah. Keeps me going. It's energizing. Manya the Cat says, Thailand used to be a vassal state of the Khmer Empire. Xiam, Thailand later invaded and took down the empire. They have a long history. Thank you for that. See,
that's
great. You learn something new every day.
We have the best listeners. Yeah. So let's take some questions. We can keep talking about this. I love this question. Elliot Covert, thoughts on Hillary Clinton saying last week that young people have been brainwashed by social media and TikTok over Israel and Gaza. You remember that?
Oh, I hate her so much. When is she just going to finally shut her big flapping gums?
That's what I always think. Whenever I hear
she is
talk.
Irrelevant to anything in America. Irrelevant.
And always mistaken.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
she's always mistaken. She's always wrong.
Yeah. I mean, on an objective standard, it's like, oh, what direction should the country go? Whenever we go the direction she wants, it's a fuck up.
That's an op-ed right there. Maybe we should write that.
she's a compass that always points south. You know, like my ex-wife was like that. You know, get out of the subway. Which way should we go? Whatever direction she felt we should go, you just always go the opposite. You'd probably be right.
There you go.
But I mean, what is the story? I mean, look, it is true that social media got the word out about what the atrocities in Gaza. in a way that mainstream media either was unwilling or unable to do, because corporate American media didn't have any correspondence there, right? The Israelis wouldn't let them in, and they didn't have the balls to go and sneak in. You know, it's Dan, like right. Dan Rather sneaking into Afghanistan in the 80s, you know, going without a permit. These people, maybe they can't pull it off. I honestly got to tell you, I could have gotten into Gaza. There's always a way, always a way.
Look at Richard Medhurst. He got into Gaza.
Yeah.
Right. These you're right. These mainstream journalists, they could have gotten into Gaza.
Yeah.
They were afraid.
They were afraid of the Israelis too. And they probably were afraid the Israelis would target them. And with good reason, the Israelis would have targeted them.
Yep.
And so anyway, the thing is, the word got out that way. And that's true. But is that brainwashing? I mean, the brainwashing, the implication of that is that these things aren't true. The implication right. is that there is no genocide. The implication is that Israel isn't committing war crimes. The implication is that Israel wasn't engaged in basically a one-sided pseudo war where they're massacring civilians.
Yeah.
And basically almost nobody's firing back ever.
And these Clintons are the same people who turned their backs on Rwanda, who mm-hmm. ruined Haiti, who turned their backs on the former Yugoslavia. So no, we're not taking any human rights advice or admonitions from the likes of Hillary Clinton. I'm getting mad.
So, I mean, the thing is, I would de-invent social media if I could, because it would save, like, journalism.
Yes.
But that said, social media has done a lot of good. I mean, hell, I never could have gotten the word out about my case. I think social media helped you a lot, John.
Yes.
In your situation, you know, you get past the censors. And that's right. what happened here. It, like, you know, social media meant that these images could not be denied. No one's ever credibly asserted that Hamas or any other pro-Palestinian force has been creating fake news or deep fakes from, you know, of Israeli atrocities. These are real. These are things the Israelis are really doing.
Mm-hmm. And when they're busted fair and square, mm-hmm. like with the murder of Shireen Abu Akleh, then they say, oh, we'll do an investigation. And then they say, oh, we did the investigation, and yeah, we shouldn't have shot her. We'll provide better training,
yeah,
for the next time.
Or the ambulance, or remember the ambulance.
Or crew. They just kill all the ambulance drivers.
Yeah,
and then bury their bodies and say, "Oh, we didn't know what happened to those ambulance drivers."
And then it's like, oh, you know, God damn it! Like, we forgot the guy had his phone running while we were killing him.
He was on the phone with his dad. That's right.
Like, oh God, horrible. Yes, let's see here.
I apologize. I'm having to read these questions on my phone because my mouse died. I hate these mice that they give us. And you have to plug it into the bottom, so when you're charging it, you can't use it.
I know. It's like, you know, Apple. Yeah, it's really, really dumb. And, you know, the other thing is it doesn't warn you until it's dead.
No, either. Exactly. It says mouse battery very low, connect to USB immediately.
It's funny, right? Like, the Apple devices are a miracle in so many ways. But, like, for example, I love the fact that the iPhone will not tell you when your voicemail is full. You just literally, people call you like it's 1996 and they say, John, your voicemail's full. And you go, oh, I better go empty those out. It's ridiculous.
I only save the death threats.
Well,
I'm serious.
I have a file for those.
You know what? Not to get too far off topic. I apologize. I get death threats every once in a while, and they're usually just idiots. But I got one. The guy called me at like 3:30 in the morning, 3:25 a.m. And I don't have my ringer on, so I just got it in the morning. But it was a very specific death threat. Mm. And he sounded drunk. So I have a Bin Verified subscription. I go on Bin Verified. This freaking idiot used his own cell phone.
Oh, God.
Right? Didn't try to mask. So I texted him. And I said, if he ever calls me again, I'm going to rip off his head. I'm going to piss down his neck. And then I'm going to shove his head up his ass. And I said, and I'm going to do it at, you know, 321 Maple Drive. I put his home address, which I found God. On. He apologized profusely. And I said, do it one more time. And I'm going straight to the FBI. I'm so sorry. I was drunk. I was watching your videos. I'm so sorry. Like, yeah, fucking idiot.
Yeah, you're really brave when you're when you're calling someone that you don't even know and threatening them.
Exactly.
I mean, people don't realize that, it's a real person here on the other side of their screen or on the other side of their computer device.
Yes.
People with just like them. Have an opinion. We might have opinions that they disagree with or vehemently, but that doesn't give you the right to do that. I mean, it's heinous, and it is a form of terrorism.
It is. I'm not going to play games with these people.
Okay, so Marie, I'm with you on that, Marie Lore. Why would Japanese militarism be more concerning than Germany's? Well,
that's a good question.
It's a very valid question, John. I can go after you.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. In fact, I don't know if you remember, but it was a very, very big deal when the German army sent a unit to, it was like Kosovo or somewhere in the former Yugoslavia, because it was the first time since World War II that German troops had been engaged in combat. And the Clinton administration was like, kudos to the Germans. This is the new Germany. They're freedom fighters. I don't know. I think the Serbs would disagree with that.
Mm.
And she's right. Why should the Japanese be any different from the Germans?
Well, I guess that, okay. So I think the difference is that the Germans and the Japanese have acted very differently since World War II. I mean, as Robbie pointed out in the chat before, I mean, Germany's been on a global apology tour since 1945. They teach their kids in in textbooks over and over and over about the Holocaust and the sins of Nazism and fascism. The Japanese, on the other hand, as you know, have whitewashed what they did, for example, the rape of Nanjing. They don't talk about the invasions of Eastern China and the entire Pacific Rim. They don't talk about how incredibly sadistic they were to POWs. So the problem is that Japanese kids now are still not being taught what their country did. And so there's no sense of national responsibility. They kind of felt we were in a contest and we lost. They don't really feel like we deserve to lose. The Germans had their noses rubbed in it. I think that's a huge difference. And you can see now in the behavior of this new prime minister where, she's fucking with the Chinese over Taiwan.
Which is a fool's errand.
For sure a fool's errand. And with no international legitimacy, considering whether it's right or not, the international community does not recognize Taiwan as an independent state.
Right.
So, therefore, there's no basis for it. But she's fucking around. She's saber rattling. The Krauts haven't done that.
No, they haven't done that. And another thing about the Japanese that has always mystified me, compared to the Germans, the major German war criminals have no acknowledged graves. They were all, cremated, or the graves are unmarked, or, they're buried in these obscure places. So they can't be venerated, right? Japanese.
Mm, they have those Shinto shrines. Yeah.
They have these giant shrines to Class A war criminals.
Yeah.
The most heinous of Japan's war criminals. And people go and venerate their graves and place flowers and food and all kinds of stuff.
And Japan, to my knowledge, has never banned expressions of Japanese national, imperialism.
No way.
The swastika is banned in Germany.
Yes, it is.
Holocaust denialism is illegal, punishable by a prison term. They've done everything they could to completely erase that legacy and to condemn it. I just think the Germans, I'm Catholic. I grew up Catholic. It's I believe in penance. The Germans have paid penance. The Japanese have not. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's right.
John, this is from Nicholas Francos. A lot of people distrust the CIA nowadays. Do you think this has an impact on recruitment?
No, I don't. There are 2,500 applicants for every one opening. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. Okay, no, so I don't think it has any effect at all.
Not a problem at all. Okay. No. So let's see. And okay. So after, but we should bring in Robbie to talk about the call-in show, right? So Robbie, yeah. here comes Robbie. Robbie West, producer. Tell us what's going on Friday and with all that.
Okay, so we're doing something new. I'm going to drop a link into y'all's chat. Like what Ted was saying,
What happened to Robbie?
Uh-oh, am I gone?
I see Robbie.
I'm here.
Oh, John's frozen.
Oh, I don't see him. I'm sorry, Robbie.
Oh, John, you were frozen. Okay. Yeah. We're good now.
Sweet. Hey, listen, this is live. This is how the sausage is made. This is the thing. So I'm dropping a link in the chat right now. If y'all want to have a chance this Friday to come on Rush Limbaugh style and talk with John and Ted, and unlike Rush Limbaugh, actually have a meaningful conversation, this is your chance. A link is going out right now. What you have to do, you have to join the Discord server, because that's where I will be grabbing the phone calls and following them through. Now, here's the important thing. This is going to be exclusively on Rumble. It's not a slight to YouTube. It's because I cannot control what comes out of your mouth. So if someone comes on and if they something that's, that YouTube's community guidelines finds offensive, it would nuke the channel on YouTube, which would not be ideal. So that's why this will be on Rumble. So as we're not shooting porn, Rumble doesn't care what we do, and they damn sure don't care what we say. So come on in, talk, be respectful, be pithy. We're going to try to go through as many people as possible. And I will let y'all know right now, I will be looking for Rumble channel subscribers first. So if you want to make sure that you 100% get in, come over to Rumble. It's $5 a month. Every penny of that goes straight to John and Ted. They keep it all. And that way, you can have a real conversation, no censorship problems, in a true free speech forum, and have a chance to talk to your favorite cartoonist and whistleblower. And if you have questions for me, that works too.
Thank you, Robbie.
Okay. Hey, may I ask the chat something? So are these Logitech wireless mice or mouses, are they compatible with Apple?
I think mice are mutually and keyboards are compatible to both.
Great. Thank iOS you for that. Because I'm going to buy one.
Okay. Question for all three of us. What's on your holiday gift list? Is that for us or by us is the question, right? I have an Amazon wish list. People can search for it. How about you, John?
You know, I used to hate it when I would ask my parents what they wanted for Christmas. I was a kid, of course, and they would say, all we want is good kids, right? Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to buy them something. I genuinely don't want or need anything. So one of my sons asked me the other day, and he said, and don't say nothing. I said, I really don't need anything. I'm actually downsizing now. And so same with my sister. She asked me what I wanted. I was like, I don't have a list. I don't want anything. I could use a pack of like black dress socks. That's it.
There are certain political collectibles that I would love.
Ah, that's different.
It's the, you know, there's the John C. Breckinridge Pharaoh type, which I'm dying to have.
Jeez, Ted.
Yeah, very deep cut there. I got to say, my real wish, John, and I think you probably share this, is to make this show financially viable.
Agreed.
Going into the coming year. We're not there. And it's not making enough money. I mean, it's like for to support us, but you know, we're kind of like right now sort of a little bit plateaued, and we need to take it to the next level. So I'm really hoping either we get a sponsor or you know, more subscribers or whatever, but that was always my goal, honestly, you know, as a cartoonist, just to be able to pay my bills drawing cartoons. Yes. Now I have that, you know, obviously that's never going to happen drawing cartoons, but because journalism is dead. But in terms of, you know, doing this, that's my goal. Some questions. MW Knox 186. Did either of us watch anything from the Doha Forum? Trita Parsi had an interesting panel. I did not.
I did, actually. I watched Trita Parsi. He's been very, very active lately. And really, he's one of the leading thinkers on the issue of U.S.-Iranian relations. I really enjoy just sitting and listening to the guy. He's so well-informed and so bright. He is wrong sometimes, aren't we all? Sure. He told me when he was on my other podcast that that he believed the United States would attack. I'm sorry, that Israel would attack Iran before the end of the year. I think things have kind of scaled back, but man, if you want to talk to a real expert who is not beholden to anybody, it's Trita Parsi.
Sean Marto has a question for us. Have you seen the response to immigration by a group in Northern Ireland? Looks very similar to previous IRA messages. The immigration problem seems to be boiling worldwide. You know, John, I've been predicting this for years, that the Ireland thing was not fully settled because it was never fully settled.
That's right.
And, you know, it's I think basically my take is that Sinn Féin got corrupted and bought off. You know, whether officially or legally corrupted or not, but corrupted in from a sense of an independent struggle. I don't know. It's one of those things to watch. I hope it doesn't start up again. But, you know, I think there could be a new IRA type movement.
I think that's exactly right. You know, I'm banned from the UK, right? We've talked about this. Mm. I'm banned.
And you're missing out on all that good food.
Yeah, right. But I go to the UK often. In fact, I spent 3 weeks there earlier this year. So what I do is I just fly to Dublin, and then you catch a connecting flight from Dublin to London. The last time I flew to Dublin, I drove up to Belfast and then flew from Belfast to Manchester. They have not figured out this border crossing situation. They were just hoping for the best, that in some cases they treat it like the UK is still an EU country, and in other cases they treat it like it's not. But this thing they come up with, it doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work. And so you go to Belfast, for example, and all the waitresses in the pubs are Polish, right? Or Slovenian or whatever. It's like, how did you get here?
It's crazy.
It is. It's crazy. It doesn't work.
Lemon curd sandwich. Venezuela. Is that an effort to flashpoint a terrorist attack in the United States? ICE, hatred, National Guard, Iran and Israel stuff, siding against Europe and the allies, victims of Ukraine as victims, business over morals. I tend not to believe in those kind of, I just don't think the deep state is that intelligent. You know, I don't think they're master schemers like that. What do you think?
I agree. I agree. There are too many moving parts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just an unhappy coincidence. Okay. Yeah. So you have okay. Everyone's suggesting the Logitech.
I just bought it. It's arriving day after tomorrow.
Thanks, Junaid and Javid. John, copyright that statement. Love it. I don't know which statement he's talking about.
I think that it was going to rip off his head.
Right. Okay, right. Manya is back. The Japanese were never really properly rehabilitated. A lot of the underlying issues and mindset that led to Japanese imperialism are still there. No doubt, the racism, the arrogance. You know, they think they're a chosen people, basically, and that they should run Asia. And yes. The Chinese beg to differ. Village Idiot, is that why Germany is committing suicide?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
John, this is a question for you from Eric Cotta Robles, from a U.S. political refugee in Helsinki. What's the difference between Finlandization and the experience of Mexico, Central America, and Caribbean countries for the past 125 years? I feel like I'm back in grad school. I'm in history grad school. Anyway, go ahead.
That's a great question. It's something that I have never thought of. That just hasn't occurred to me. But what is the difference? I think that in practical terms, there is no difference between Finlandization.
You want to explain what that is?
Finlandization was this agreement that Finland had with the Soviet Union that it would maintain an independent, not really independent, a not anti-Soviet foreign policy in exchange for the Soviet Union not, you know, invading and occupying it.
Right.
And so at the United Nations, the West could never count on Finland because they essentially had to do what the Soviets told them to do in international affairs.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, just this, wasn't it just yesterday that some Trump administration official openly said that they now revived the Monroe Doctrine, which basically was you know, President Monroe saying the U.S. dominates, basically nothing happens in the Western Hemisphere, North, Central, or South America without us being okay with it. And we that was abandoned, you know, I mean, although school kids aren't really taught that it was abandoned, but right. It was abandoned.
For all intents and purposes.
And now Trump is saying, well, actually, that's back.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I want it back. I have to say, if I were the president, I believe in sort of a NAFTA type, you know, doctrine. Like if Canada, Mexico, that's like, you guys have to be our friends. It's finlandization. You're not allowed to not be our friends. But, you know, can I be concerned about what happens in Chile? I don't want to be that worried about it. It's so far away.
Yeah.
It's further away than Europe.
I agree.
I mean, people, you know, it always blows my mind that you can fly from New York City to Buenos Aires and it takes 12 hours, but you're still pretty much in the same
time zone. Time zone. It's 1 hour difference. Well, and look at it this way. If the Chinese build an oil refinery in the Caribbean, which they're doing, is that an act of war against the United States? How can we legitimately invoke the Monroe Doctrine when there's not been an act of war? It's just the Chinese announced that they're going to build an oil refinery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's everything's an act of war, John. Drug trafficking's an act of war. Illegal immigration is an act of war. Everyone's invading. Everyone's attacking.
Yep.
You know, pretty soon when someone posts, you know, an annoying, you know, X post about you, that'll be an act of war.
Yeah.
It's an act of war. Manya the cat. The Chinese are kind of similar to the Japanese, and the world will find out soon. Their doctrine for thousands of years was Han people are civilized, everyone else are savages. Okay, I beg to differ, having spent a lot of time in both countries. They're different. And like you can tell, for example, Japan is such a homogenous society.
Oh, yeah. They don't like anybody from the outside.
And they're not exposed to them. And they don't but like, you know, you look at, for example, the Chinese currency, and it has writing in numerous languages and different alphabets, right? Because China is an empire and they have these, you know, they're incredibly diverse, you know, ethnically and culturally and linguistically. And they acknowledge it in their, you know, yes, the Han are the dominant ethnic group in China, but they know there's others, and they, you know, it's like, I knew a guy, he was Han, he was married to a Uyghur. That couldn't happen in Japan.
That's right. It could not happen, period.
All right. So we should talk about Congo.
But, you know, before we talk about Congo, I just add, did you happen to see the push notification last night that Looney Tunes Democratic congresswoman from Texas, what's her name? She's running for the Senate now. The one that didn't know that Jeffrey Epstein was dead in the hearings the other day, Crockett.
Yeah, yeah. Jasmine Crockett.
Jasmine Crockett. Yeah. She's running
Senate. She's the MTG of
The Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She announced yesterday that she's going to run for the U.S. Senate, which just shakes up the entire race. I'm going to go on a limb and say she did this without saying anything to the party leadership. She just announced it. Now, on the one hand, this is good news because she's going to lose and she's not going to be in Congress anymore. And so we don't have to listen to her stupid pronouncements that are
unless you watch MS Now, which is where she'll land.
That's right. That is where she'll land. That's exactly right. And at the same time, you know, the Democrats had kind of this, their go-to guy, this former football player and former representative Colin Allred. He's the guy. And this year it's going to be tough because it looks like the incumbent Republican senator is going to lose. And so maybe the Democrats actually have a chance. Now she's going to force the Democrats to spend money in the primary, thus falling behind in the general. I just don't understand what her point is. You know, over the years, I've seen some really stupid members of Congress. There's kind of a famous clip from 20 years ago. When a Democratic congressman from, I think it was Atlanta, was questioning the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff about Guam. Do you remember this, Ted? He was asking about
this is the best thing in Guam, the world.
And he was asking how we could send so many troops to Guam with all those pieces of equipment and heavy tanks. Isn't it going to make Guam sink?
Or tip over.
Tip over is what it was. And the general's like, no.
When I first watched the clip, I'm like, the dude's joking.
Oh, he wasn't joking.
No.
No, he wasn't. He was afraid the island would tip over because we put too many people on it.
I mean,
that's Jasmine Crockett at the same time. That's the kind of person true. She is. She's an idiot.
Dumb.
Just plain dumb. Yeah.
I mean, I really wish there was some like 25th Amendment kind of way to remove people like that. Forget about the politics, just on the grounds of you be dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, this person, yeah.
Yeah. Just.
Well, no, I totally agree. No way. No way she checked in with Schumer, right? No way.
Not a chance. Not a chance. Schumer would have told her absolutely not.
Well, yeah. No question. Hey, so we have a little bit of breaking news. A federal judge says that the DOJ can publicly release investigative materials from the case against Ghislaine Maxwell. The judge ruled after the DOJ asked two judges to unseal grand jury transcripts and exhibits. So, you know, there's going to be some more info coming up.
Good. Okay.
We'll see what happens. Meanwhile, the Catholic Church is asking people to dig deep into their pockets to pay $300 million to settle the pedophile priest up. I mean, I got to say, I mean, if you're a Catholic and that collection tray comes around, and I've been in church since this started, this thing, you know, broke. And it's like you see that thing come around and you're just like, I know where this money is going. It's just going to pay these settlements for these perverts. Like, I'm not paying for that. I mean, they deserve money, but just not from me. I mean, it's like, that's not why people go to mass, right? I mean, I just don't get it.
I don't get it either. Now, I was going to say something, and I think it's probably better left unsaid.
Sorry. Okay. quick question for you, John. Texan 2021. Do you have any experience with intelligence services from the European microstates, Monaco, San Marino, and Liechtenstein?
Luxembourg, I have. Yeah. They were good fellas. But the other ones, no.
With Luxembourg, I would imagine a lot of it had to do with financial transactions.
It was all finances, yeah.
Yeah, because money Luxembourg, and, yeah. Luxembourg has a much stronger secrecy laws than to protect clients than Switzerland.
Yeah, you Switzerland know, caved after 9/11 to the Treasury Department, and Luxembourg said, no, we like things just the way they are.
But even back in the 80s, Switzerland was not what we think of as Switzerland, you know, like the numbered account, you know, like in Bourne and stuff like that. Like, that's it's not. Luxembourg was more like that.
Yeah. In the old days. But no, you're right. Not in our adult life.
Where they literally didn't even know who you were. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to know who you are. Just come in with your money. Your money's good. We're fine. Okay. So Congo. All right.
I thought this was all over.
And apparently
it's nowhere near over. And how can a country as big as Congo keep getting its ass kicked from a country as little as Rwanda? And it's really not the whole of the Congo. It's Eastern Congo, which is where all the rare earth metals are. That's what makes this all so important.
Yeah, Congo. I mean, the thing is, though, but Congo is vast, right? I mean, if memory serves, I mean, because of the Mercator projection, when you look at the map, it doesn't look as big as it, but I think it's like the entire United States east of the Mississippi River. And then the effect of it being the fact that the roads aren't great, to say the least, makes it like the distances are bigger effectively, right?
Yes. Because
to get around. So we're just talking about a vast, very wealthy, very fucked up historically territory, still reeling from the Belgian experience. So Rwanda's M23 rebels are about to capture a what they call a strategic lakeside town. I always like that idea that some towns are strategic and some are not, but I kind of understand it. Yeah. I mean, I would say symbolic, maybe more importantly, but sometimes, but certainly, yeah, if you control the side of a lake, you can imagine the reason how that could be useful for resupplying and stuff. So, you know, Trump, to his credit, has been attempting to put out these brush fires in places like Cambodia and now Congo. But obviously, you know, even a really talented deal maker or diplomat and or diplomat is going to have trouble with all this. At a certain point, is he going to be just, do you think he's just going to say, well, you know, I tried with these guys and, you know, I knocked their heads together and yeah. They can't make peace.
They won't fuck get them. With the program. Yes. Remember, Donald Trump is not a detail guy.
Right.
He's the big picture guy. That's why we, again, have Jared Kushner running all over the Middle East and Russia and Ukraine. But yeah, I think Trump gets easily frustrated. And if these two countries want to continue fighting, I think he's willing to just walk away and let them continue fighting.
However, the rare earths are so important to big tech companies. So from a business perspective, he's got to be thinking, you know, every chance I have to get access to those rare earths, we've seen this in Ukraine, is something that he wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember reading once that we got almost all of our chromium from Congo. And chromium's not just, you know, for, you know, chrome bumpers, which don't exist anymore. It's for cell phones and missile guidance systems and all kinds of sophisticated things.
So,
And by the way, 200,000 people. That's just incredible.
Yeah, that's a massive movement of people. And they must be absolutely terrified because these are not, you know, these are people who live in a dangerous neighborhood and they're not going to just hit the road every time some asshole with an AK-47 rides through town on a technical, right?
That's right.
These are, you know, so it must be very, very ugly there. I mean, John, where the fuck is the UN in all this?
Exactly. Right?
Isn't that their job?
That's right. The UN should have peacekeeping forces there to keep the two sides apart. And there should be a UN negotiator there to negotiate this peace that we can't seem to negotiate.
Do they just not do that anymore?
Who knows?
Losers.
I wonder if the rules are that both sides have to ask for it. I don't know. I'm just making that up. I don't know if that's the case, but maybe it is.
I don't think it is. Well, I guess there weren't. I guess maybe. Like in Rwanda, though, the government didn't ask for UN peacekeepers, but they came anyway.
Yeah, they did.
We're number 10 on Rumble.
Hey, great.
So that's good. Question for me in Tibet. Well, I'll make this short. I've never been to Tibet. I've been to China. I've never been to Tibet, which is, I know, in China. Were the signs in Tibetan and Han both? Did the people say Tashi Dalek to you? So China doesn't, I will say, I imagine the signs are probably both in both, because in Xinjiang, the signs are both in Uyghur and in Han Chinese, and sometimes in English too. So I don't know. Someone has been, but yeah. John from John Smith 161. How did the CIA feel when the DGSE, you should say what that is, committed a terrorist attack and sank the Rainbow Warrior in New Zealand? I remember that.
They didn't care.
You know, that's the French.
The DGSE is the French intelligence service. There's this odd view. I have to be very careful what I say here. The CIA and the DGSE have proper relations. They're not close, but they're proper and formal, and they work together pretty well. But the DGSE is kind of known for being out there just whacking people, whether they're Al-Qaeda operatives in the Sahel or Rainbow Warrior, you know, environmental activists in the South Pacific. If the French government sees someone as a problem, they're going to get whacked. And the DGSE is very happy to go out and do it.
I mean, the Rainbow Warrior thing, it didn't go away. It was extremely bad PR.
Very, very bad PR.
I mean, it was
literally... You go assassinate unarmed environmental activists?
Yeah. And bomb their boat?
Yeah.
I mean, it was serious gangster behavior.
You could say that again. kind of what the like what the Israelis do to boats.
Yeah, well, and now us in the Southern Caribbean. MT16N7, thank you very much for the $20 generous donation.
Oh, thank you
on Rumble, much appreciated. Is military procurement the most fraudulent thing in government? In the UK, we've spent billions on a small tank called Ajax that can't be used because it's so badly designed it falls to bits.
Kind of sounds like the F-35. I would say that the answer to that question is yes. We were talking yesterday, for example, about Fat Leonard. We only talked about it for a minute. But yeah, there is so much money, more than $1 trillion every year in defense spending, most of which goes to contractors. So yeah there's people really are swimming in money and it's very corrupt.
I really wish we did our own, you know, that we built our own. We had a U.S. government plane builder and designer, U.S. government missile plane. I would do that if I were the president, because this is an inherently corrupt practice. John, my father told me something that blew my mind about the way that these contracts are awarded. You no doubt know this. But like, so like normal corporations, when let's say like you and I form like John Ted Corp, and we want to buy like, we want to buy some 10 fighter jets. What would we do? We'd call Boeing and Northrop Grumman and we'd say, hey, we'd like this particular jet. How much, what's the cheapest you can sell them to us for, right? That's what a normal person would do. And what a normal company would do. But the Pentagon doesn't do it that way at all. They call up Boeing and they're like, we'd like to give you a $200 million contract. What can you build for us? And they're like, would you like maybe a car or a small car? I mean, literally, I mean, just the inherent nature of that is, I mean, if someone told me, Ted, we're going to hire you for $100,000 a year to produce cartoons, how many cartoons can you do? I'd be like, one? I mean, you know, it's like black and white. Simple, one panel. I mean, because I'm going to do as little as possible to get as much of that money as possible. It's just it's the structure is inherently corrupt. That's how you get the $800 toilet seat.
That's right. That's exactly how it happens. In the meantime, everybody makes $1 million a year or gets $1 million bonus and buys a giant mansion out in Great Falls.
It's insane. It makes no sense at all. It's just, you know, and so obviously it's, yeah, I could go on. Okay. So let's, John, should we move over to, what do we think about this Congo situation? It's just going to be like, sucks to be you in Southern Africa. Oh, well.
I think so. I hate to say that, but yeah, I think that a whole lot of people are going to lose their lives unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not optimistic.
And obviously, you know, I don't think either country can fight this to a victory, right? I mean,
agreed.
Neither country is invading and taking over the other one.
Agreed.
Yeah. Congo is bigger. Rwanda is richer. So, or more, better organized.
Yeah, better organized.
Way to put it.
Right.
Okay. So I do want to, I'm dying to talk about this. So Warner Brothers is in play. Their Netflix pretty much had a deal, had a bid accepted. They keep the number keeps moving around, but somewhere between $72 and $82 billion for Netflix buying Warner Brothers. Then Paramount Skydance stepped in with an over $100 billion hostile takeover bid that I think is going to be hard for major shareholders to ignore. I mean, that is a lot more money. But now it's coming out that the investors behind who are putting up the cash for Paramount include the Public Investment Fund, that's the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Saudi Arabia, the Qatar Investment Authority, and a new Abu Dhabi, also Sovereign Wealth Fund, called the I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the Limad Holding Corp company. And so I'm thinking, okay, so if the U.S. government is incredibly, on a bipartisan basis, concerned and terrified of the cultural and technological impact of TikTok, gathering private user data and propagandizing America's youth with silly dances. Because of the fact that they have an ownership that is Chinese based, isn't this the same or maybe bigger? I mean, you're talking about like these Middle Eastern entities that have very different cultural and political values from Americans coming in and potentially owning this giant conglomerate that should, that will determine what movies and TV shows we see. And you and I both know those things have a tremendous impact, not to mention they spend a lot of time gathering user data, just like TikTok does. And that's what Netflix did. I mean, Netflix's first big show was House of Cards, right? The US version of the UK show. But the way that the reason that was the first show was because their data from streaming showed Netflix that people liked dark noir like political comedies and they liked Kevin Spacey. So they just smooshed it all together, insta hit, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that it's about the data gathering as much as it is about just getting the clicks.
Yeah.
Maybe more so. I mean, is there a national security interest here?
I think probably not. It reminds me too, and I'm sure that you'll remember this, Ted. When Hillary Clinton first became Secretary of State, the U.S. aimed to sell AWACS radar planes to the United Arab Emirates.
My father was involved in that negotiation.
And the UAE is one of our closest allies in the world. But then people started shouting, we're going to sell these sophisticated planes to those Arabs. Mm-hmm. They wear sheets. They wear robes, right? And racism took over. And so the Senate blocked the sale of the AWACS to the United Arab Emirates. Now, we ended up sending them a year later anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, people love to hate. And I don't think that the Qataris, the Saudis, or anybody else that has trillions of dollars to invest are going to have any impact on our programming. I really don't. Just like I don't think the Chinese have any impact on, our youth or on programming through TikTok. I think this is all a tempest in a teapot. It's made up problem on Capitol Hill. And I think that Paramount or whomever happens to be involved should just take the money and smile.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I just wonder if anyone on Capitol Hill would decide to try to make hay out of it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Post 9/11.
Sure.
I mean, it would seem to me to be more of a genuine, if there's a threat, there's more of a threat here than there is from China and TikTok. The Chinese government doesn't own TikTok.
No.
But these are Middle Eastern governments. These are governments.
Yes. The sovereign wealth funds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's government. Yeah. Sure. That's government money. Or government control in highly government influenced money. Yeah. Let's put it that way. Right. Let me read an ad if that's okay. Still haven't tried 1775 coffee. Now's your shot. The 1775 starter kit just dropped. Only 1,000 units, although I think it's 999 because I think Robbie has one. You're getting the bold dark roast that hits hard, the smooth medium roast, and the vitality mushroom coffee for clean energy and laser focus, no crash. All single origin, small batch, toxin free and mold free. Plus, you're also getting a gold spoon clip because freedom isn't scooped with plastic. A frother strong enough to stir up your coffee and your mother-in-law's opinions, and which would be saying something because she's dead. A black 1775 tumbler. $170 worth of coffee and gear, yours for $99. This is for the ones who've been watching 1775 blow up on Rumble, wondering if it's really worth it. Spoiler, it is. Go to 1775coffee.com/studio and grab your starter kit before they're gone. Bold beans, clean fuel, and a morning routine that stands for something just like Rumble does. I'm still laughing about the complaint yesterday, John, about my reading the ads too fast.
I noticed that you were markedly slower. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I aim to please. We'll watch that. I mean, one question, I mean, obviously we're not business reporters, but I mean, I think that the the Paramount deal has, the offer has to be taken really from a fiduciary standpoint, responsibility standpoint. The board pretty much should sell to the hostile takeover bid, right? I mean, it's like the money's so much richer. They owe it to their shareholders.
Yeah, I agree. They owe it to their shareholders. That's really what the bottom line is going to be. Yeah. At the end, I think it's going to be whoever ponies up the most money is going to get Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we will see what happens here. We have a question from Gavin Breen. Were the IRA ever on the CIA's radar? Well, that's a question for you, John.
Not really. They were far more on the ATF's radar and the FBI because there were so many Irish Americans or Irish nationals in America that were involved in crime like drug trafficking so that they could use that money to buy weapons and ship the weapons back to Northern Ireland. So it wasn't so much a CIA issue as it was FBI and ATF.
You know, John, I remember in the 1980s when I was in college in New York City, going to Irish bars in like the Village. And literally they had a sign behind the behind the bar that would say 10% of all proceeds go to the IRA. Wow. And it was a State Department designated terrorist organization at that time. There was a bar called Ireland's 32 in San Francisco that was the same way. And they had like giant posters of Bobby Sands and all the hunger strikers behind the bar. And they made very clear, like, you know, we're not just sympathetic to this cause. We finance it and we do whatever we can. You kind of got the sense there might be some hard men serving behind the bar.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
It's different now. It's so different. My local bar until fairly recently was owned by a guy from, this is not the IRA, but he was owned by a Weather Underground guy who had been on the lam for years. And it was the same sort of thing. Like he was one of those guys, he was very quiet, but you know, the kind of person who gives you that look, like if you were a problem, you would be suffering physical pain in a big way very soon.
I got a call day before yesterday from a guy who is on the run. He's a former Navy enlisted man, and he was charged with multiple felonies for threatening his commanding officer and threatening the commanding officer's wife, like very specific threats, who he was going to kill, what he was going to do to them before he killed them, that kind of thing. So he was charged and then released on bond and just took off. So he called me, somehow got my number, which I guess is out there on the internet someplace, and asked for advice. And I was like, dude, turn yourself in. Making a terroristic threat, big deal. You do a year, maybe two. Big deal. Going on the run is not...
Get it over with.
Get it over with. Just be done with it.
Yeah,
you know, are you going to hide the rest of your life?
Yeah, I used to be friends with the woman who wrote the book that became Orange is the New Black.
And, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this was before, so she had gotten...
We follow each other on Twitter.
She had gotten in, Piper. She had gotten in trouble, years earlier, like at least 8 years earlier, with drugs, and she'd been swept up in this sort of this money laundering thing. Long story short, I remember she was just like, the feds haven't told me when I have to report. She was in touch. She wasn't doing anything wrong. But it was just sort of like she kept hoping to stay out of it. But in the end, the best thing was ultimately when they were like, it's time, come in and do your 18 months or whatever and get it out of the way. And that's when, you know, she wrote the book based on her experiences.
She ended up doing less than a year or less around a year. Because of good behavior and stuff in a minimum security camp. And
Connecticut.
Look what she turned it into in Connecticut.
Yeah. 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 No, I knew she was going to do that. She's a very smart woman.
Yeah.
Okay. Very quick question. What do we think about Ron DeSantis designated the Council on Arab Islamic Relations as a terrorist group? We've got a minute.
Yeah. He doesn't get a vote in what's a terrorist group. I have friends who happily contribute large sums of money to CARE every year. He's irrelevant now. He hates being irrelevant, and so he's trying to get himself in the news again.
All right, guys, we're out of time, and I totally agree with that, John. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Please stay tuned for the TMI show with me and Manila Chan, except Robbie West will be filling in, so things might be a little spicy if we talk about pedophile priests and stuff like that. Who knows? Thank you to Star Runner for gifting a subscription to the D2D program and becoming a monthly supporter at the same time. We'll talk more tomorrow about how you can call in on Friday. See you later. Bye, John. See you tomorrow.
Goodbye.